You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. To start today's show, I want to apologize to all our listeners out there after yesterday's technical difficulties. That's completely on me. Don't blame Tony. Don't blame anybody else. I'm center to blame for that. My Wi-Fi has been bad for 2 or 3 weeks. Basically, anytime I don't record inside the studios, it's hit or miss. You know, I know it, you really probably can't tell the difference sometimes, but sometimes the Wi-Fi can just be so bad that it gets all cutty, and it really frustrates me. Just as much as it frustrates you, because, you know, I think I make good takes and I want them to be heard clearly, and I want to be able to use this tape for to show people and stuff like that. So I'm going to keep fixing it, keep working on it. Today, there should be no technical difficulties at all. Today's podcast should be easy and should sound great. Let's get right to it. So for today's show, I have about 3 topics I want to hit. The first one I'm going to talk about right now is the antidote to the Victor Oladipo double teaming at the end of games. So if you read IndyCornrows.com or follow Caitlin Cooper or follow or just watch Pacers basketball, to be honest, you probably have noticed the Pacers' most reliable end of game play is the Miles Turner Victor Oladipo pick and roll switch. Get Vic on the bigger defender, let him get space, let him roll to the rim fast as he can, and he scores. And that worked, and it's been working, and it worked to success against the Milwaukee Bucks, the Wizards a little bit, the Celtics. I mean, it's definitely worked. Teams have started to adjust to it. They've started to double-team Vic right out of the pick and roll and force the ball out of his hands into another player. Now, the double-team issue, we haven't seen a ton of yet. We've seen it in isolated incidents, but I can bet you almost every dollar I have to my name that it will become an issue in the playoffs. Because once you get into a 7-game series and coach watches tapes and they've scout you for every single game, teams will figure out how to we stop Victor Oladipo at the end of games, because that's how we have to win this series. And so the antidote to that right now, and it's worked, I would say, an isolated example, it worked against the Celtics, and it worked a couple other times, just in non-close games, is to get Turner to have more confidence, to post Turner up, one of the two things. So confidence, it's Turner gets the ball. Let's say they run a pick and roll at the top of the key, top of the right key. Depot gets trapped really far off 3-point line. He said, just chuck it to Turner standing, let's say, at the free throw line. Turner has to immediately at that moment just shoot. Or if he sees an opening, go to the rim. Somehow Turner's got to score. I think he's the best number two option. He's the best ability. And he did that a little bit. You know, I think there was a Wizards game where he looked kind of hesitant to shoot and then he waited too long to pass. And with Turner, it's just like he's got to make the play. He's got to stop overthinking it, and he's just got to do it. And he's been doing that. You saw against Boston, they got the switch. He posted up Marcus Morris, and he got the ball, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do with it. He went right to the rim, and he banked it off the glass, and they won the game. In the Lakers game, in an isolated example, I saw the Pacers run this same thing, where Vic had the ball bringing up the court, Turner set a pick, and basically both defenders switched. The smaller point guard, I believe it was Lonzo Ball at the time, was guarding Turner. Victor Oladipo immediately recognized it, passed to Turner, and let Turner post him up, and I think Turner scored. And that's what the Pacers have to do. They have to figure out that if teams are going to double-team Vic, Turner's got to just become the offensive option. And maybe there's a play where you can pass it back out to Vic, whatever, reset it up, run other off-ball actions to get a guy open, and maybe it's as simple as pass it to Turner, and then, you know, Bogdanović is open in the corner, or Joseph, something like that. But what I'm saying is they're sort of adjusting to it, and I would like to see them do it more because it's going to be super important in the playoffs. You have to win 4 games in a 7-game series to win a playoff series. I know, shocker, Captain Obvious over here. Let's say they win one by a blowout because you just catch the team on a, you know, some team on a bad night. It happens in the playoffs, you get blown out one game. Usually it's the first home game that you play, you blow out the other team, and you lose your first home game on the road or whatever it is, something like that. Let's say they're able to win another 1 or 2 by Victor Oladipo's late game heroics, just doing what he does, getting the pick and roll to work, if they just go into the rim or hitting his jump shot, whatever it is. But to win that 4th game, they're going to have to pull some other trick out of their hat. And that trick could be the idea of Turner wins the game on a jumper, on a post-up, some kind of play to get Turner open for a game-tying or game-winning shot. Because he all of a sudden has this confidence. Shout out to iPacer blog, by the way, for that video of Turner where he sort of like – where he looked really focused in and he was answering a question about being called soft. And he looked like he had this like almost – you could see like this anger in his eyes, but like an anger that leads to playing well or leads to sort of like motivation. And he – it was really kind of good. I don't know if Turner was tired. He said he wanted to go home. I mean, he was joking with Victor Oladipo in the video. I really recommend you go check it out. It's on iPacer's blog. But that video was really cool to me because – I think it's the first time I've really seen Turner, not mature is not the right word, but have that streak in his eyes where he's like, you know, they say Jordan had that mentality, the Jordan mentality. Like, he almost had that mentality. And that's what you want from a guy you think is going to be one of your best two players in 2 or 3 years. And you want to see that he has this, like, super competitive edge to him when it comes to these close games. And he wants to be the best. And I love that. And it's no secret that I'm a huge Miles Turner fan. You know, I think a lot of people underrate him at times, and now he's getting kind of rated properly. And I think he's had a struggling year due to injury. But I love Miles Turner. I think he has an immense amount of potential. I mean, you know, I think Anthony Davis, Giannis are the only guys that maybe can beat him in potential for the future. So I love Miles Turner, and I love to see that he looks a little more aggressive. The next thing I'm going to do is preview the Pelicans game, which is happening later tonight. Indiana returns to New Orleans for the second time this year. Unusual, obviously. You don't usually play Western Conference teams twice on the road. But the first time the Pacers were there, there was a rainout, leak in the roof, whatever it was, in Smoothie King Center. The game was canceled and moved to March 21st. It could not come at a worse time for really both teams. The Pacers, who don't get any rest for the month of March because of this game, have to play every other day. But it is much, much worse for the Pelicans. This game will be their fourth game in 5 nights, a back-to-back, the second game in a 3-game back-to-back. It's just honestly unfortunate for the Pelicans and a really bad scheduling mishap, but something the league had to do ultimately because both the Pelicans and the Pacers are in competitive playoff races that, you know, they couldn't just cancel the game and reschedule it for later. Like, the game's going to matter. You know, the Pelicans are within a game or two of, I think, 3-10, and so are the Pacers when it comes to 3-6. They're all within a half a game. So this game is going to be important. They're going to have to play it eventually, and it's better they play it now than play it, you know, let's say on a Tuesday after the season where it could decide a playoff spot. So that's a good thing. But the Pelicans come in as, you know, one of the hottest teams since the All-Star break. They are 40-30. Just like the Pacers. Actually, the Pacers are 41-30, and the Pelicans, I guess, they could be 41-30 because they are playing. I'm recording this on a Tuesday evening. They're playing tonight, so they could be 41-30 for all we know. They are sixth in the Western Conference. They have the third highest pace in the league. They are 11th in offense and 15th in defense. Obviously, the big difference between the first game the Pacers played against the Pelicans and this game is no DeMarcus Cousins. Cousins tore his Achilles, or whatever it's called, blew out his Achilles earlier this year and on January 26th. Since then, though, the Pelicans have been playing pretty well, in particular two players, Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday. Davis is averaging 31 points a game, a ridiculous amount of points. Holiday, 20. But the more unique thing I find without Davis is the insertion of Emeka Okafor. So for years, it seems like Davis should be played as the prototypical stretch five. You know, he can shoot the three, he can take you off the dribble, get into the rim, he can post you up, do all that stuff, but he refuses to play center in the Pelicans because he is their star player and they don't have anything else. They basically put up with it the same way the Pacers put up with Paul George playing small forward, is they allow Davis to play power forward. That's why they assigned him Emeka Okafor, who's playing center. Okafor doesn't have ridiculous stats. He is averaging about 5 points, 5 rebounds. Okafor has played 16 games with the Pelicans. He started 13 of them. He doesn't play a ton of minutes. He's only getting about 16 minutes per game. Basically, he plays, I think, him. Diallo is obviously a power forward, but I think he steals some minutes at center. Davis obviously plays a little bit of center, but it's basically to help Davis not play center the entire game with Boogie out. He's, like I said, a Okafor, nothing special. The other kind of unique lineup thing I like to look at is they play Jrue Holiday at the two. The Pelicans start Rajon Rondo as a point guard and let Jrue Holiday play off the ball, and it's been pretty successful for him. Holiday's stats on the year are 19-6-4. He is shooting 49% from the field, But since DeMarcus Cousins got hurt, he's putting up 20 points per game, so a little bit of an increase. He's playing a ridiculous 36.5 minutes per game. The Pelicans basically rely on Holiday and Davis to sort of carry the team, and then they sort of fill in the rest with some, I guess, measly bench players. I guess we talk about their bench right now, which is it's the 27th worst or best bench in the NBA, so that makes them the fourth worst bench. They put up 27.5 points per game. By comparison, the Pacers bench only puts up 32.5. That's still five whole more points. The Pelicans don't have a good bench. They've been, you know, hurt by injuries. They got Solomon Hill back. He returned on Sunday, so he might play, but it is a back-to-back, so who knows. They lost Ian Clark at one point. Obviously, they lost Boogie, forcing, you know, them to sign Emeka Okafor and bring another guy in the starting lineup. But the main guys off their bench, really the main one to watch, is Nikolai Mirotic. I believe the Pacers will play him five times this year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he didn't play the first time they played the Bulls, so maybe they only see him four times. But Mirotic killed them one time. I believe he had a 30-point game back in December, or either December or November against the Pacers. He's just somebody to watch because he come up their bench. He's a lethal three-point shooter. If Thad Young is guarding him, that could be an issue. On the season, he's putting up 13 points per game with New Orleans put up 13 points a game, and on the season, he's putting up 15.5 points per game. Look up his stats. Real quick, his stats when he played the Pacers. He did not play the first down against the Pacers, but in one of the games, he had a whopping 28 points, shooting 8 of 16 from 3. So that was the game I remember. The Pacers lost the game to the Bulls back in December. That was pretty miserable. And then off the bench, you know, like I said, you got a couple guys. You got, like, Cheick Diallo. You got, I believe off the bench coming Darius Miller at times. I mean, it's a lot of just sort of filling guys, nobody that really scares you, and that's kind of where the Pacers have the opportunity to win this game is really by exploiting that bench unit, letting, I would assume, Corey Joseph, who's going to now not start anymore and Cousins going to start the game, Corey Joseph and Lance to really exploit the bench unit. I honestly expect Stevenson to have a pretty big game. He actually, I believe he's a former Pelican, played there for a couple games when he was signed. I think he was signed to a 10-day contract with them. I expect Stevenson to have a big game, and I also kind of expect this could be a good opportunity for Al Jefferson as long as Mirotic isn't really playing center because they are a little undersized. They don't really have a true backup center per se. They have a couple pieces who are like going to probably play center, but they don't really have a full, you know, go-to backup center per se. So that could be the opportunity for the Pacers is to exploit Al Jefferson. I don't think Domantas Bones is going to play, but if I was to have one X factor for this game, now we did it on the Monday or the Tuesday pod, but it's Miles Turner. He continues to be an X factor. I talked about him earlier in this podcast. If Turner can hit his first couple of jump shots and sort of kind of take it to Anthony Davis and force Davis to really guard him. Now, maybe Okafor will guard Turner, then it'd be Thad Young. Whoever's being guarded by Davis can force him to really exert some effort on the defensive end. That will change the game. For the simple reason that if Davis is going to kill them offensively, he's killing everybody offensively. I would not be surprised if Davis has 40 points, but it doesn't mean that Pacers still can't win the game even if Davis has 40 points. The idea would be if they can exhaust him on defense just a little bit, maybe keep Davis to like 35 points instead of 45 points, that could be the difference in the whole game. Obviously, watch Victor Oladipo. He will be guarded by Rajon Rondo most of the night, would be my guess. Darren Collison could be in for a big day if he's guarded by Jrue Holiday. Both guys have been really good on defense this year, so just something to watch. Both of the guys have – Holiday is kind of in the defensive, at least the all-defensive team conversation when it comes to guards, and Rondo has just obviously been a really good defender. He's got long arms. For the Pelicans game, I think I'm going to predict they win this game. I think the Pelicans are not able to overcome this back-to-back thing, this four games in five nights. That's just exhausting. I just feel bad for this team almost because, honestly, they should have made the playoffs and they got really badly hurt by Boogie's blowing out his Achilles. So I feel bad for this team, but I think it's an opportune time for the Pacers. They can steal a win against a team I think they normally wouldn't beat. I think the Pelicans are actually probably a slightly better team than the Pacers, but the back-to-back and four games in five nights thing will help the Pacers win this game. Probably a close one, predict, let's say, a three-point victory. The last thing I want to hit on before I finish up today's podcast is check out my article on IndyCornrows.com. It should be posted as you listen to this podcast. I did it on the Pacers' defense and how I basically looked at the Pacers' defense and tried to figure out why it's gotten so much better. What's weird is basically since January 1, they've had a top 10 defense. Before then, they had a just miserable defense. I mean, it wasn't like bottom 3 to 5, but it wasn't anywhere near the top 15. It was probably in the 20s range. They've been a lot better in 2018. I don't know if it's because they slowed the game down a little bit. Their pace has fallen off since earlier in the year. That could be too. But whatever it is, their defense has been a lot better. The rating has gone up. And they're one of the few teams who's hovering around top 10 in both offense and defensive rating, which is a good sign for an NBA team. Check out the article. I go really in-depth. I talk about some of the big defensive like kind of style Pacers play, the kind of plays they make, all the kind of stuff. I really go really deep into their defense, which is always important in the playoffs. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, follow us at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Follow me at FriedmanAdam5. Rate our show 5 stars on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you check out this podcast. As always, we'll be back later in this week. Tony's doing the rest of the week, so this is my last podcast for the week. Won't hear my voice anymore, but have a great rest of your day.